are listening to the Invitation Church podcast. To learn more about Invitation Church, visit us online at invitation605.com. You can also download our app on iTunes and Google Play by searching for Invitation Church. Today's message comes from my dad, Pastor Dick Campbell, or as I like to call him, Daddy Bo. It's a continuation of a series called Dark Clouds, Deep Mercy, a study in Book of Lamentations.
Hi everybody, my name is Miles, and here comes my dad with the message.
Welcome to Sunday Night Church, everybody. Just a question as we continue in part 5 in our series in the Book of Lamentations called Dark Clouds, Deep Mercy. Like, what are you like when you're mad? Like, are you quiet? Do you pretend like everything is fine? Do you respond with one word answers to someone who's trying to get curious about what's going on with you? Do you get sassy? Do you talk back? Do you get cynical? Do you get sarcastic? Like, do you get loud? Do you get sad? Do you get red in the face? Do you isolate? Do you distance yourself? Do you get a look on your face that communicates to everyone who can see you just how angry and upset you are? Today in the Book of Lamentations, we need to talk about anger. And we need to talk about not just the anger of God, but also we need to talk about the anger towards God. And some of us, honestly, just aren't that comfortable with God being angry. That the picture that has been painted for us of who God is he's a God that's under control, that he never gets upset, he never gets angry, there's never anything in the world that he needs to respond to with authority. And that's just not true. And I hope that that can free up some people today. Because there are some places in the scriptures where God gets mad. He gets really, really upset. I can remember as a youth pastor, this one time I was on a youth trip with a bunch of students, and I was talking to one of these blessed teenagers on a bus about some behavior that I was noticing that I was not okay with. And I got really upset. And I'm not a guy who will raise his voice a lot or get really, really frustrated in that way. I'm honestly a guy that probably gets more quiet. So when I am angry, when I am upset, I get more quiet. I kind of shut down in that way. I kind of go internal. And in this particular moment, I did not do those things. And let me tell you, it just was really effective on the whole bus. The whole bus just went quiet when I got a little bit louder because of the behavior that was going on in the bus. We'll just leave it right there. And when we talk about anger, when we think about, okay, like, what is that actually? I believe the way that I like to think about anger is it's really just a statement that has four words to it. And here's the words: I am against that. Like, that's what anger ultimately is about. It's a pronouncement, it's a declaration of you being against something that is unfolding in the earth. And so I can remember as a third grader being in line to sharpen my pencil. We used to have these pencil sharpeners that were attached to the wall, and so you would have to get in line when you needed your pencil sharpened, and you'd go and sharpen it and then go and sit down. And there was this kid, and when I got to the front of the line, he cut in front of me. And so because I'm a very spiritually mature person, especially as a third grader, I didn't say any words to him. I just stomped on his foot with my snow boot on, and I got sent to the office for that. But it was a statement. It was a moment like, hey, I'm against you cutting in front of me. Like, that's ultimately what anger expresses. Like, I'm against this unfolding in the world. I'm against being spoken to in this way. I'm against being I'm against lies being sold as truth. Like, these are things that I am against. And anger actually, I believe, is evidence that you have values, that it's proof of your humanity. And so I believe that our work is not to control anger, but I believe our work is to express it in ways that reveal the kingdom, to express anger in ways that help us step more fully into the work and person and ministry of Jesus as we wait for him to redeem and to repair and to restore all things. So my hope is that these poems and lamentations can coach us in this, but how to express the anger, because there are things in this world that I am against. And when I step into a moment, when I speak to those things, I'm doing a couple of things. I'm getting honest with myself, and it's actually an opportunity for me to live more fully into the person of Jesus. So Lamentations chapter 2, we're going to pick it up in verse 11. My eyes fail from weeping. I'm in torment within. My heart is poured out on the ground because my people are destroyed, because children and infants faint in the streets of the city. They say to their mothers, "Where is bread and wine?" as they faint like wounded men in the streets of the city, as their lives ebb away in their mothers' arms. Verse 13, "What can I say for you? With what can I compare you, O daughter of Jerusalem? To what can I liken you that I may comfort you, O virgin daughter of Zion? Your wound is as deep as the sea. What can heal you? The visions of your prophets were false and worthless. They did not expose your sin to ward off your captivity. The oracles they gave you were false and misleading. All you who pass your way clasp their hands at you. They scoff and shake their heads at the daughter of Jerusalem. Is this a city that was called the perfection of beauty, the joy of the whole earth? All your enemies open their mouths wide against you. They scoff and gnash their teeth and say, 'We have swallowed her up. This is the day we have waited for, and we have lived to see it.' The Lord has done what he planned. He's fulfilled his word, which he decreed long ago. He's overthrown you without pity. He has let the enemy gloat over you. He has exalted the horn of your foes. The hearts of your people cry out to the Lord, O wall of the daughter of Zion. Let your tears flow like a river day and night. Give yourselves no relief, your eyes no rest. Arise, cry out in the night as the watches of the night begin. Pour out your heart like water in the presence of the Lord. Lift up your hands to him for the lives of your children who faint from hunger at the head of every street. Look, O Lord, and consider. Whom have you ever treated like this? Should women eat their offspring, the children they have cared for? Should priest and prophet be killed in the sanctuary before the Lord? Young and old lie together in the dust of the streets. My young men and maidens have fallen by the sword. You have slain them in the day of your anger. You have slaughtered them without pity. As you summon to a feast day, so you summon against me terrors on every side. In the day of the Lord's anger, no one escaped or survived. Those I cared for and reared, my enemy has destroyed." So there's this shift that we see in chapter 2, especially kind of the second half of chapter 2. We see this first person show up. So language of I and me. And you need to remember that Lamentations, they are both poems and prophecies. So poems tell more than just the facts. Their work is to invite us to hold in our hands what is in the heart and mind of an author. So take this poem that got turned into a song. It's called On Top of Spaghetti. And here's how it goes. On top of spaghetti all covered with cheese, I lost my poor meatball when somebody sneezed. It rolled off the table, it rolled on the floor, and then my poor meatball rolled out of the door. I'm gonna keep going? Okay, good. Verse 2. It rolled in the garden and under a bush, and then my poor meatball was nothing but mush. The mush was as tasty could be, and early next summer it grew to a tree. So that is a lot different than just talking about the fact that I dropped my meatball. There's this imagery that comes with the facts, and that's what we see in the book of Lamentations. And so we have to understand that prophecy reflects the heart of God in speaking the words of God over a situation, while also embodying what God is feeling. So this helps us with the question in the book of Lamentations, like, where is God? Like, God is communicating actually through the words of his prophet. A lot of times when we come to this book of Lamentations, we miss this. We think that it's just Jeremiah pouring his heart out to God, saying, where are you? What's going on? This is wrong. How could this happen? How did we end up here? Like, where is your mercy? But we have to understand that Jeremiah only speaks as he is filled, as he is empowered, as he is prompted by God himself. And so we're misreading Lamentations if we've read it as just one prophet's words to a God who's detached and silenced and unmoved by the suffering that fills every crack in the heart of Israel. So in Lamentations, God's anger is saturated with God's grief. There are both human and divine tears. And the announcement of Lamentations is that the wicked and oppressive systems will come to an end. Like, this is why God is bringing judgment. Because wicked and oppressive systems, while they exist now, they have an expiration date. They will come to an end. That God is going to bring his kingdom. So when you look at the world and it seems like the systems of the world, the wicked and oppressive systems, it seems like they're king. It seems like they're being high and lifted up. It seems like they are being worshipped. The promise of Scripture through the work of Jesus on the cross, his life, his death, his resurrection, all of that points to him being victorious over the wickedness and the oppressive systems that this world is ruled by. And we also have to understand that God's not just concerned with personal holiness. So, like, am I living the way of Jesus? But also in corporate obedience. So what's corporate obedience? Does our world look increasingly like the one that God has in mind? I mean, this is in Jesus' prayer, the Lord's Prayer. Like, may it be on earth as it is in heaven, not let's find a way to get off this earth and into heaven. Those are different things. And so, my translation of that is, if it isn't in heaven, like, why on earth are we making a place for it here? Like, if it's not in heaven, if it's not ruling and reigning and high and lifted up in heaven, then why are we making a place for it on earth? You can't have corporate obedience without personal holiness, but a gospel speaking to personal holiness only is completely incomplete. And here's what we have in verse 11. My eyes fail from weeping. I'm in torment within. It literally in the Hebrew says that my bowels are burning. My heart is poured out on the ground because my children, my people are destroyed because children and infants faint in the streets of the city. So, like, remember who's speaking here. Like, Jeremiah is speaking for God. Like, his heart, God's heart is being poured out on the ground because his people are destroyed. Because children and infants faint in the streets of the city. Like, this is against the natural order of things. It's a reversal of God's created order. Like, this is not the way that it should be. That children and infants should not live in this kind of world. Jeremiah chapter 30, we find these words speaking about this. Verse 18, this is what the Lord says, I will restore the fortunes of Jacob's tents and have compassion on his dwellings. The city will be rebuilt on her ruins and the palace will stand in its proper place, From them will come songs of thanksgiving and sound of rejoicing. I will add to their numbers and they will not be decreased. I will bring them honor and they will not be disdained. Their children will be as in days of old and their community will be established before me. I will punish all who oppress them. And then in verse 13, we have some really powerful imagery that your wound is as deep as the sea. Your wound is as deep as the sea. So this is, I believe, a symbolic of everything that is vast and endless and infinite and chaotic and frenzied and tumultuous and beyond measurement. Like you can't measure the ocean. You can't measure the sea. It's wild. Wounds are as deep, and wounds that are as deep as the sea are surely beyond healing. And they're surely different than getting a scrape on your skin. And so I think we can talk about relational wounds. I think we can talk about relationships that we've had in this world that have deeply wounded us. Wounds that go all the way back to childhood. Wounds that have to do with relationships that we've had in elementary school and middle school and high school and young adulthood. I think we can talk about spiritual wounds. I think we can talk about communities of faith that have wounded us deeply when they ought to have come alongside of us and told us the truth. They've not done that. And that's part of what the judgment of Lamentations is all about. These prophets, these spiritual leaders who did not care for God's people well. I think we can talk about societal wounds. I think we can talk about the injustice that we have experienced from society. We can talk about financial wounds. We can talk about how this desire for increased wealth, or the way that the decrease of wealth has caused us to feel about ourselves, like those are wounds that are deep. And then comes this question, who can heal you? Like, this is what's true of you. Your wound is as deep as the sea. So, like, who can heal you? Like can the prophets heal you? Can neighbors heal you? Can your, and like, no one can heal you. No one can heal you but the healer. And this is what the miracles of Jesus, the healing miracles, are about in the Gospels. Someone who can't walk, someone who can't see, someone who's been paralyzed, someone who has experienced blindness, like their entire life. Like Jesus comes on the scene to say, like, I'm the healer. Like there's a lot of false healers. There are a lot of fake healers, but I'm actually the one who can do something about your situation. And then he actually does it. So he's both powerful and generous. And there's this old hymn from 1847 called Abide With Me. And it's written by Henry Francis Light. And we find these words in it. When other helpers fail and comforts flee, help of the helpless, oh, abide with me. When other helpers fail and comforts flee, help of the helpless, oh, abide with me. And I love that understanding of God, that he is the help of the helpless. And that he truly is, indeed is, the God who abides with us. So the question, who can heal you? Only the healer. Verse 15 and 16, we see the enemies of Israel, they showed contempt through their gestures. You know how you can tell a lot? There's a lot of communication that happens non-verbally with gestures. They clapped their hands in glee, they scoffed and shook their heads. They opened their mouths and gnashed their teeth. That's maybe the one we don't really get. Like, we get like clapping their hands in glee. Like, we've seen people do that. We've seen people scoff and shake their heads. But I don't know the last time I like opened my mouth and gnashed my teeth at somebody. But in the scriptures, in the ancient world, it's just a picture for rage, for anger. And really, this is a way to mock, I believe, Psalm 48 that says, great is the Lord and most worthy of praise, and the city of our God is his holy mountain. It's beautiful in its loftiness, the joy of the whole earth, like the utmost heights of Zaphon. Is Mount Zion, the city of the great king. God is in her citadels. He has shown himself to be her fortress. So this is what's supposed to be true about Israel. Like, it's beautiful in its loftiness, and it's the joy of what? Of the whole earth. And now what is it? Like, its people have been defeated, they've been destroyed, and they're laying in the dust of the destruction of Babylon. And what's interesting about Lamentations, as I've been studying it, is a lot of Old Testament books and scriptures, like, they show up in the New Testament and other places. Like, Isaiah gets quoted a ton in the New Testament. And Zephaniah and Zechariah and Deuteronomy, like, these Old Testament books get quoted, but Lamentations doesn't ever show up in the New Testament. And so, like, what's up with that? What's going on with that? And while it's true that Lamentations never directly mentioned in the New Testament, I found this week a clear allusion, I believe, to Lamentations chapter 2 in the 15th chapter of Mark. This is at the crucifixion. Mark 15, beginning in verse 25, it was the third hour. When they crucified him, the written notice of the charge against him read, "The King of the Jews." They crucified two robbers with him, one on his right and one on his left. Those who passed by hurled insults at him, shaking their heads and saying, "So, you who are going to destroy the temple and build it in 3 days, come down from the cross and save yourself." In the same way, the chief priests and the teachers of the law mocked him among themselves. "He saved others," they said, "but he can't save himself. Let this Christ, this King of Israel, come down from the cross that we may see and believe." And those crucified with him also heaped insults on him. Like, this sounds a lot like Lamentations chapter 2. When the people who are around Israel to watch their destruction, to watch their pain, to watch their suffering, to watch the wounds play out in their lives, this sounds a lot like what's happened. The people around Jesus, the teachers of religious law, the very soldiers themselves, the very criminals who are killed with him. And we know one of them has expressed faith in Jesus, but the other people who are crucified with him also heaped insults on him. And then in verse 19, we see four imperatives. And the first imperative that we see, this command to arise, cry out in the night as the watches of the night begin. Like, arise. This is resurrection language. This is active language. To, like, to get up. To stand up, to move from where you currently are into a different state of being. It's one thing to lay down and to have this passive role in the world, but it is a different thing entirely to have an active one. So arise. And then the second imperative, to cry out in the night. This is Exodus language. This is the people of God who were in slavery in Egypt crying out to the only one who could do anything about their situation. Like, crying out for freedom from their oppression. So we see arise, we see cry out. Then we have this third imperative, pour out your heart. And this is, okay, it goes all the way back to 1 Samuel and this woman, Hannah, who's unable to have children, and she's in the temple pouring her heart out in prayer to God. And Eli, the priest, comes and has this conversation with her. His assumption is that she's drunk, that she's had too much to drink, when really it's her anguish that is causing him to have that opinion of her. And so Hannah in the scriptures is this example of this woman who just pours out everything that she has at the feet of the God of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, and pleading for mercy, and pleading for transformation and pleading for healing. And she's pleading for a baby. And then this last imperative, lift up your hands to him for the lives of your children who faint from hunger at the head of every street. To lift up your hands. This is a symbol in the scriptures of worship and blessing. So would you bless God in surrender of him, even in this time, even in the destruction? So tonight, I just want to ask you to pick an imperative. I want you to pick an imperative. Wherever you are, wherever you're standing, whenever it's unfolding in your life, would you pick an imperative? Would you arise? Like, would you cry out? Would you pour out your heart, or would you lift up your hands? Would you bless God in surrender of him? I'm not asking you to do all four imperatives. I'm just asking you to choose one of those. I'm not asking you to pick all four of these imperatives. I'm just asking you to pick one of them to make a spiritual practice in your life this week. You know, there's this poet that I really like, and her name is Adrienne Rich. And don't worry, she's not the one that wrote the On Top of Spaghetti poem. That's somebody different. But she has written this poem, and at the very end of this poem is this beautiful line that the door makes no promises. It's only a door. The door makes no promises. It's only a door. So, like, what are you going to do with the opportunity? What are you going to do with the door? Are you going to look at it? Are you going to examine it? Are you going to wish it was something that it's not? Or will you open it? Will you walk through it? And I think, as I think about our time, as I think about Lamentations, I think that in a lot of ways in the month of July in 2020, I think a lot of us have a door in front of us. And we could wish it away. We could want this situation to be different. I absolutely have been there. Like, I wish we just were in a different situation, but the fact is we're not. And so the door before me doesn't make any promises. It doesn't tell the future, it doesn't even tell me what to do in the present, but it is a door, and so I have the opportunity to walk through it. And I think in the book of Lamentations, at the end of chapter 2, it ends with this picture of a door of God's people. Like, they have been defeated. And they're lying in the dust. And they have an opportunity before them to arise, to cry out, to pour out their hearts, and to lift up their hands in blessed surrender of the God of Isaac and Abraham and Jacob. So I just want to leave you with that today. The door makes no promises. It's only a door. So what will you do with it? Grace and peace.
Thank you so much for joining on the Invitation Church podcast. I will want to encourage you to take the message that you just heard and receive every part of it. Every promise from God, every declaration of his great love for you, every word of hope, every reminder that you have been made for more. I'll allow what you've heard to root in your soul, to allow Jesus to do the deep work that he can only do. I want to also encourage you to be a part of what we are doing at Invitation, as we invite people to live the way of Jesus. Go to the app and become a regular giver, an investor in the story of God. Also, if you found this message meaningful, we'd love to have you to share it with someone else as you partner with us carrying in this message beyond the walls of our church. I want to thank you for being here with us. grace and peace.